Spirituality Center presents Muffin Talk with Beate.
Hello, this is Beate again. Today, I have a special visitor with me here in the studio. It's Dennis Horton. He is part of the mission team of the Sisters of Mercy Ministry. And I'd like to welcome here in the studio. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Beate.
And what does that mean, mission team of the Sisters of Mercy Ministry?
When the Sisters of Mercy first began their work, it was mostly sisters who did it. They ran their organizations almost single-handed. But increasingly in recent years, they've needed to invite other people to become involved in the work. And part of the challenge is to make sure that those who are working in mercy organizations, whether they are schools or hospitals or community development initiatives, that they understand why it was the sisters began that work and what kind of values are important as the work is done. The mission team has a responsibility for making sure that all those who are working in mercy organizations know something of the story of how the organization came into being, why it was the sisters got involved in that area of activity, and what kind of values they would want to see honored as the work unfolds.
So it's more about history, is it? And how do you link with the history to today?
The history is important because it gives us a clue as to why the enterprise exists, to know whether we're on the right track, whether we're doing the right things and doing them in the right spirit. It depends on how well we know the story that went before, because we didn't invent these ministries of mercy. They were given to us really as a gift, and we honor them by making sure that we are standing well on the shoulders of the people who've gone before.
In the team of the mission, is that a team that consists of sisters and lay people?
There's one sister involved in the team I'm part of, and two lay people.
Mm-hmm. How did you come to that position? Did you enjoy the story of Catherine McCauley? Did you get invited to come on board and to learn about the history? What?
I was persuaded to apply for the job by a sister of mercy whom I knew well, and she thought that perhaps I had the right skills for the job. I don't think I knew a lot about Sisters of Mercy until I began the work. Mm-hmm. But you're not in it long before you start to get a handle on the story.
So you did some research on the Sisters of Mercy also?
To apply for the job, I found out as much as I could in a very short space of time. Yeah.
Good. Was there some research available already? What was when you started?
Probably not as much as there is now. For instance, the sisters have a very good website, both here in New Zealand and internationally. That wasn't there when I began this job 14 years ago, but there were plenty of books and written resources.
Mm-hmm. Last week I was at a celebration to commemorate the arrival of the Sisters of Mercy here in New Zealand. Can you tell us more about that situation when they arrived after long travel on the boat from Ireland to an unknown country at the other end of the world?
The story is a very interesting one. The bishop, the Catholic bishop in New Zealand at the time, was the Frenchman Jean-Baptiste Bompalier. And he had been asked by Maori women especially if he could find for them some wahine tapu, some holy women. They said, "We know that you're here as the bishop and you've got priests and brothers helping you, but we understand in the Catholic tradition there are also dedicated women religious. Could you find some of those for us?" So he went back to Europe, as he always did when he was either mm-hmm. short of cash or manpower.
Yeah.
He went door knocking in France and Belgium and then to Ireland. And it was in the small Irish town of Carlow that he was welcomed by the Sisters of St. Leo's Convent. And the sister in charge said, "I can't give you an answer straight away," after he'd said what he was looking mm-hmm. for. She said something like, "Come back in a week and I'll let you know what the response will be." And when he came back, she said that she was willing to go and that there was a small group of sisters who would come with her. Eight in all.
Mm-hmm.
And they made the journey from They left on a small sailing ship from Antwerp in Belgium, and it took them 8 months. They travelled with the bishop and with others as well. And after 8 months, they landed in Auckland on the 9th of April. They were the first Catholic religious women to come to New Zealand.
Last week, I said something about Bishop Pompalier teaching them Maori on the boat, on the ship. Was there any other preparation for the sisters before their arrival in New Zealand? Do you know anything about it?
Only the stories that he was able to tell them. There was no internet, there were no computers, there was no way of checking up online where they were coming to. So it was a complete unknown. And most of them would have made that journey probably sensing that they would never go home again, that this other place on the other side of the world, about which they knew very little, was going to be their home for the rest of their lives.
How old were the sisters when they arrived here?
They varied in ages. I think Mother Cecilia Ma, who was the leader of the group, was probably in her 50s.
Mm-hmm.
But there were other quite young women.
Yeah.
So one or two of whom were in the process of becoming sisters. Their training wasn't complete.
So did they finish the training on the ship?
They finished the training after they got here, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot of learning on the boat. I think the bishop did a lot of teaching.
Yeah. And the other people on the ship, did they tell them something about New Zealand or Australia? I don't know if the ship did the ship stop in Australia?
Did stop in Australia. I think they were there for a week or so, catching their breath before they made the last leg of the journey, and probably they got stories as they travelled.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And when they arrived here, you said the other day that they arrived and they were really welcomed by the people. They were expecting them already.
Yes. And the early reports are that the whole town turned out to see these nuns, as they were called then.
So they arrived in Auckland.
They arrived in Auckland. Got off the small ship and took an open boat to the what is now Customs Street, and walked from Customs Street up to St. Patrick's Church, as it was then, before it was a cathedral.
Mm-hmm. And it was at the same place where now the cathedral standing.
Indeed, yeah.
And where were they accommodated, the sisters?
There was a house close by into which they moved. It was small.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't there very long before a larger convent and orphanage was built in Hobson Street. And then, as you know, in not too long a time, Bishop Pompalier made available to the sisters a large piece of land in New Street in Ponsonby,
mm-hmm.
where Mercy Hospice Auckland and St. Mary's Convent and St. Mary's College now stand.
That's still the headquarters of the Mercy Sisters in New Zealand, is it?
It began to be the house for the leadership of the Auckland Foundation. But to cut a long story very short, in the year 2005, the four traditional foundations in New Zealand became one. So there's only one leadership team now, and that's based in Wellington.
So when the sisters arrived, what was their task? You said that the Maori women asked for wahine tapu. So the wahine tapu arrived. What did they do? Did they go out and talk to the Maori women, or did they start schools or nursing?
I think their first tasks were around teaching children. And, of course, the environment into which they came was very different from what even perhaps Bishop Pompalier had expected. The Maori land wars had begun and had created huge problems for the population.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the Maori left Auckland and returned to their homes in the north. So the contact with Maori was to some extent interrupted right from day one. But there were orphans that needed to be cared for.
Mm-hmm.
Children whose parents had been killed in the wars, and they were both Pākehā and Māori. So from day one they started teaching, visiting sick people in their homes, visiting the colonial hospital and the prison.
Mm-hmm. And And the Pākehā at that time, there were many Irish Pākehā here.
Indeed there were, and that was, in a sense, part of the problem. There were Irish settlers here who also had expectations of these Irish religious women who wanted their children taught. And some of the first schools were in areas where there was a significant Irish settler population, places like Howick and Onehunga.
Were these the places also where the fencibles lived?
Indeed.
And when they were teaching, did they teach mixed classes of different ethnic groups?
They did. They taught mixed classes. And in time, and not too long a time, they developed what they had known in Carlow, and that was to provide fee-paying education.
Mm-hmm.
The fees helped to provide schools for the poor.
So the fees were paid by the rich people?
Mm.
And by those parents who could afford it.
Indeed.
Is that right?
Indeed. And the money from the fees helped to provide education for those who had no money.
Like a solidarity fund?
Yes. So it was a two-tiered education system.
And in what language did they teach? Did they teach in English or and Māori?
It would have been a kind of English spoken by Irish sisters, yeah.
Yeah,
and Māori. They learnt Māori on the boat, I think. Pompeii's, one of his tasks was to help them to learn rudimentary Māori, but it would have been with a strong Irish brogue, I'm sure.
And the Irish children, did they know any Māori? Because if you had mixed classes, you have to have one language in which all are more or less familiar.
If they didn't know, they would have picked it up pretty fast, I'd say. And within a year, there was, I think, 250 children in the schools that the sisters were running. And the Governor General, the Governor came. Who was it? Gray. Governor Gray came, and he gave them a very complimentary pass. He said the sisters were running exceedingly good institutions.
What other institutions were there at that time, except for the sisters?
Well, there in Auckland there weren't too many. There was, I think, a hospital, general hospital,
mm-hmm.
but it was some years before the Sisters of Mercy were able to provide a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
That opened in Mountain Road in about 1900, I think.
Mm-hmm. So the fact that the sisters were teaching, that explains why you have so many schools that are founded by the Mercy Sisters. And like at our Mercy Spirituality Center, behind the center is a primary school, a Catholic primary school, and behind that is the church. And I think that is one of the oldest schools. It was founded in 1921, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, St. Mary's College dates itself from the year the sisters arrived. That's 1850, so that's quite early. And there were many parish schools in the years between 1850 and 1900.
Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah. Today, my guest is Dennis Horton. He is part of the mission team of the Sisters of Mercy Ministry. And he was telling me about the history of the Sisters of Mercy in New Zealand, when they arrived after their long journey, and their work and dedication in the education field. Dennis, I heard the other day that the sisters had some diaries when they came here, and they were writing many details down and things that are quite amazing. Can you tell us more about these diaries of the sisters?
The only diary I'm aware of is the one that was written by the young sister, Philomena Dwyer, who kept a diary on the long voyage from Belgium to Auckland. And I think the sisters have still got that diary, which is a wonderful record of this very eventful trip.
Can you tell us more about what she wrote?
They were just little insights into what it was like to be travelling in a sailing ship that mm-hmm. was very crowded,
mm-hmm.
Through terrible weather sometimes, or through weather when the ship was becalmed, and that was a problem in the tropics when it didn't seem to be going anywhere at all in very hot, sticky weather. I think Mother Cecilia Maher said, like eight in a cabin is not too cozy.
Especially on that such a long trip.
she said famously in a letter home after she arrived that this was a trip that no one would make except for God, which I think was her way of saying it was quite a challenge.
Yeah. And she was in letter contact with Bishop, because I remember having heard about one of the sisters talking about the prices in Auckland and that they were quite happy that there were potatoes in New Zealand and that the potatoes were very cheap.
They wrote home often. Their disappointment was when they got here to find that there were no letters waiting for them, because the mails were very slow, and they felt that they'd been forgotten about. Wasn't true, of course, but there was a steady flow of letters, mm-hmm. backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
Sometimes Mother Cecilia Maher would write to the Bishop of Carlo. Sometimes she would write to sisters in the convent from which she'd come. Often they were letters with a begging invitation at the end for other young women who might come to New Zealand,
mm-hmm.
especially ones that were fluent in the languages that were being taught. If they were good at French or good at embroidery, good at teaching the subjects that the children of the wealthy, well-established families in Auckland would want their daughters taught, that would be a big plus.
Yes, and the education was one of the big goals for the Sisters of Mercy. And that's one reason why in the Mercy Spirituality Center, we always try to educate. So that's why we have different topics like what is coming up, the creative response to the spirit through song by Chris Skinner, or the invitation to Christian meditation by Sister Catherine Wiles Pickett. It's all has to do with well-being, with education, and the sister started something that is still ongoing.
We are inclined to think of Catherine Macaulay, who founded the Sisters of Mercy in Dublin in 1830, as a woman ahead of her time. She lived in an island where many Catholic families suffered greatly for what we could consider the basic needs of human life. It was part of the penal system that the British had in place for many, many years in Ireland. And education, Catherine Macaulay saw as the one way forward, especially for young women.
Mm-hmm.
If they could learn, they could be employed. If they could learn something, they could train, and they could be an influence in the lives of others.
Mm-hmm.
Education, especially of young women and girls, was a high priority for Catherine Macaulay.
So the school said, you were saying that the focus was on girls, but the boys, were they also in the same schools?
I think in the primary schools there were certainly boys taught by Sisters of Mercy for many years. But the tradition in New Zealand, as the church continued to develop its school system, was that brothers and priests would teach boys, especially as they moved into their adolescent years, and were probably considered too much of a handful for mm-hmm. gentle religious women.
And today, how many schools are there still from, according schools that are in the mission of the Mercy Sisters? In Auckland.
Today in New Zealand, there are five secondary colleges that are owned by the Sisters of Mercy. Many of the schools which they founded in more recent years have become schools owned and operated by the diocese.
Mm-hmm.
So they did a lot of founding of schools which have since passed to other hands.
Mm-hmm.
But many of those, especially primary schools that were founded by Sisters of Mercy, have a strong sense of their own beginnings,
mm-hmm.
and they nurture the Mercy connection,
mm-hmm.
and the Mercy story, which is where they've come from. They nurture that today as being quite distinctive and special.
So there's a special teaching also for the children that they are aware of this special story, mm. the background of the sisters, mm-hmm. and how it all started.
Mm-hmm. You know, my work base is St. Mary's Convent in Ponsonby, which is where the sisters have been since the late 1850s. And as part of that site, there is the original chapel that Bishop Pompallier opened in 1866, mm-hmm. and a small cemetery behind the convent where many of the founding sisters are buried. And children from Mercy schools now come to visit our site to see some of those historic points of interest. They enjoy going into the old chapel, mm-hmm. and they enjoy looking at the headstones in the little cemetery.
Yes. So you really have this link from the past to today and towards the future.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important. Thank you very much, Dennis. So in the future, I think that we'll have to invite you again and that you can tell us more about the sisters.
I look forward to that.
Thank you very much.
Beate.